So, and that'll be available on the website. So, but if you, for some reason, that's not okay with you, you let me know afterwards. Someone just arrived. Welcome.
Yeah, sorry, I was a bit late.
That's okay. It's okay. We're just starting. So yeah, when I'm speaking, I'm going to be muting everybody, unless you've got something like, say, an urgent question or something you need to tell me about. Technically, you can also chat somewhere. There is a in your bottom of your screen. There's a little box that says chat, and you can send me messages if you need to send me a question or something like that. So yeah, so this is the first of three seminars. And all, and the three have a common theme, and the common theme is there. I would call them like three gifts of focusing. So I've been doing this practice focusing for since 2003, and I was yeah. I guess I was reflecting on what has it brought me, and these three came to mind as sort of the top three at that time. But I reflected on it, and this is the first one: freedom from self-criticism. Yeah, so this call really is about that topic. I've got some sort of practical pieces to share with you about that, about how I guess how that's how to do that. Let's say how to make some steps in that direction. And it's also important to say that I haven't. It's not something like, oh, I see. I've completed the journey. I'm free from self-criticism, but I've noticed a big difference. So I'll say more about that. But I guess going back to the beginning of focusing, just very briefly, I think. One of the things I noticed when I started to turn my awareness to myself in this particular way, which I think has focusing as a particular way, I noticed how harsh I was to myself, even after years of Buddhist meditation and plenty of books on kindness and compassion. So it sort of shone a light on how harsh I was to myself. So I guess it was a shock, but also a lesson too, that something needed to change, and focusing brought that for me. There's an image from Stephen Levine, and if you've done a workshop with me, you'll know this image because I share it every time I teach a beginner's workshop. But the image is of this whole process of self-criticism is if you were to walk into a restaurant and see two people talking to each other the way you talk to yourself, that you'd call the police. That makes sense? And you think about it for a while. Yeah, that's right. You know, how harsh we can be with ourselves. Even, yeah, like we would never speak to that way to somebody else. But how critical and how harsh, how judgmental, damning, how much hatred even we can express towards ourselves, yeah, far more than anyone else. So yeah, it's been a great relief to me that focusing over the years has kind of brought greater and greater freedom from this process of self-criticism. So notice also I say process rather than like the inner critic. So I'll say, I might say more about that in a moment, but it's not right. I don't think there's kind of one thing that one is, but it's a process. It's a practice and a process that we're exploring. So I want to share three tools really from that journey of I guess finding myself more free from this. Yeah, tonight. But where I want to start is just inviting very quickly. Or simply, like, what do you do when you are attacked by your inner critic? Let's use that language. If anyone has a, like, how do you deal with it? Just, I'm curious about what people do already. And if you know focusing, maybe you have something from that. But from any, in any way at all, just some of your regular common strategies for dealing with what we're calling this, the inner critic. And I'd be curious if anyone want to share just a sentence or word or that would describe that if you're. And you have to unmute yourself and to do that, obviously. How might you respond, I suppose, yeah.
I feel like shit.
Oh, yeah, okay, right, yeah, actually, okay. It's actually, it feels bad. Feels like shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Makes me feel like shit.
That's right. Or when it come, when that critic comes. Yeah. 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 Okay. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So that's there's already something happening there. There's like a process, and then we or something in us, we end up feeling bad. So, you know, to hold on to, let's hold on to that a little bit, because it's pointing towards something more about this. But thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, yeah, someone else saying something here. Yeah, lots of, yeah, again, this is something that happens, and we tend to feel bad about ourselves. Someone's chatting that on the chat. So this is what, it's a very typical response, so I guess collapsing. So something happens, we feel criticized by some part of us, or the other way this works is we project that onto other people. We turn up into a place and, you know, I bet all these people are thinking I'm really awful or stupid or thick or ugly or... But either way, we end up, we collapse. We collapse with the bad feeling of that. So it's important just to note here. That's one response, one very common and difficult response. And that, in a way, probably needs the most compassion of anything. Later on, I'll be talking about compassion towards the critic, but actually, even before that, taking time with that part of us, let's put it this way, that part of us that feels awful about itself or criticized. Whenever a critic is there, you've got something in you being criticized. So stop me if this doesn't make sense, but... So there's two things going on in this process. There's something in you criticizing and something feeling criticized.
Mm.
So, but yeah, just a kind of a tip really here is actually spend time with that part of you that feels bad. Something in me feels awful. It feels despairing, or it feels like, yeah, it is really shit. It is worthless. Or, well, I'll just pause there. And anything more? But yeah, so we've got a kind of collapse. Anything else that people do with the critic comes?
Yeah, I kind of, I notice it a lot easier, the part that feels bad.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's a bit harder to identify, okay, what am I saying to myself? Or what is the critic part saying that makes, you know, brings on this really bad feeling? And what can be helpful when I actually able to, you know, point that, okay, I told myself that this is unacceptable, make this mistake, and therefore, you know, I feel so bad, and then I can kind of open, you know, I can, you know, sort of intervene almost as a sort of, you know, from a different part, you know, from sort of more, you know, my big me, you know, self in presence that kind of just give it compassion, that, as you said, to that part.
That's right,
kind of counter effect, you know, a bit the message is that, well, maybe these things happen, you know.
Right,
I understand that it's not a good thing that anybody makes a mistake, but maybe we all make a mistake, and so we don't need to feel quite as devastated.
That's right, okay, So it's giving yourself some compassion, sounds like, or reassurance, and thank you, But yeah, I mean, that can be. It sounds like also that's not always possible, is it? That's something that's not always available. Are you sure?
Not easy to pull away, you know, and see the parts in, you know, in operation. It's very easy to just get sucked into the part that is just totally devastated, and there's no anybody else who can see. We can notice that oh, that's what's happening, or can have a bit of distance from it. That seems the difficult bit.
Definitely, and that's one of the tools we'll be exploring in a minute is how to develop some space. But that's not just like a switch, is it? You know, that's an ongoing practice. That's right. Someone else is about to speak. So someone else.
Yeah, like for me, it seems to adopt like the opposite, like. Reaction to the critic. It's either I'm just going to discard it and say, you know, whatever you're saying is, you know, not right. You know, I don't have to believe you. Or it's paying too much attention to it and believing it.
Yeah, you know?
So at times it seems that I've got no middle ground. It's either, you know, I just tell it to just go away, or I'm just maybe in a state of mind already during the day that, you know, that is not great. So when the critic comes along, I just think, yeah, you're actually right, you know, I'm rubbish at this, or, and then things go even, you know, further down, you
that's
know,
right,
during
yeah.
the day. So, yeah. But I feel, I obviously, the two ways, it's not even as if I'm controlling, you know, anything at times. It's just obviously when I'm able to discard the critic, I feel I can go through the day much better, obviously.
Yeah, sure.
If
yeah, that's
I don't, I feel not, why would I believe that? It's just not real, you know. And
Yeah, thank you. That makes sense. That's right. So it's the better of two, isn't it? To not believe it and to sort of ignore it or push it away. Certainly, that because it feels better, doesn't it? It feels better. I guess, and I'm interested in this sense of you haven't. There's no middle ground, and I guess that's what I'm inviting a curiosity about during this call. Mm-hmm. We'll come to that. Yeah. What is there? Is there another way? And I think it's important to acknowledge how important it can be just to get some space from it in the way you might be talking about, like by not believing it. Like, okay, just. But like, come back another time. I can't deal with this right now. Or sort of those methods definitely bring some temporary relief from this process, and that's great. But I guess what I noticed that is that what brings a deeper change is something in this middle ground. So, yeah. So let's explore. Thank you. So let's explore that a little. So the three tools I want to share with you tonight. Let me just check on my time. Yeah, I should be able to cover this. So. The first one I can't figure the right name for. Let's call it grounding. It's an inadequate name for it, but it's some kind of arriving in the present moment in an embodied way that helps us to not identify so much with that process. It's normally a critical process. We feel like they're up here, they're in our head, or they're projected out there. But so yeah, taking some steps to notice what just the present moment through the senses, through the body, which I'm calling grounding, for now is the first step. Next step is making space for a bigger you to meet something that's critical. So was, and the last step, which is something I've been experimenting with more recently, is I guess contacting a deeper truth. So, and I'll say what I mean when we get to those. So those are the three sort of tools, three skills we can develop and have at our disposal. So let's start with the first one, and let's do a bit of it right now. So I'm going to lead us in I guess a sort of generic, if there is such a thing, but some kind of process of what I'm calling grounding. Why I find grounding a difficult term is because it doesn't always resonate with some people, because it's not really about noticing the ground, but I guess it's about creating some kind of safety in the present moment, or contacting what feels safe and what feels okay. And it may not come through contact with the ground. It might do, but it is one thing. It is for sure. It's about being in the present moment. So I'll lead us in like 3 or 4 minutes of this, just like and just invite us to share how it was, and then we'll move on to the next one. So for this, I'll invite you to all you need to is get your body comfortable. Don't close your eyes immediately, because I'm going to invite you to look around a little. But yeah, as we get into it, please do. But certainly get yourself as comfortable as you can do right now. And I'll be muting everyone apart from myself. And then so firstly look around the space that you're in. And look around not just with your eyes, but with your whole head and your neck. So it's like we're taking it, even if you know it very well, just have a little look around. And this is actually a really important thing in itself. This already actually helps physiology begin to settle. It's like, imagine when an animal enters a room, or a cat, you know, probably even if they know the room well, they look around and check it out. It creates just a bit of safety in your physiology. So take it in, and maybe there's something that you like in the room, a picture or a painting. A bit of fabric or something, but noticing that maybe there isn't, but And then begin to just allow your body to sort of find a comfortable place to settle and have your eyes open or closed, whatever would feel right. And first I'll invite you to just scan your sort of sense of being in the body right now. And the invitation is to notice what might feel okay in your body, or even good. Now, if you're in a lot of pain right now, or your body doesn't feel good, just kind of don't worry too much. You don't have to feel. This is just an invitation. This is just one way of finding something that feels okay. But yeah, if you do notice something that feels okay in the body, then just spend a bit of time noticing it. Maybe it's the breath, or the sense of support. Sometimes the lower back can be a great place to let your awareness rest where it's got support. Again, that really helps your physiology. So noticing that. And just like noticing the direct sensation of it, the sense of it. Or if your body is not feeling okay, like feel, where does it feel most all right? Perhaps just be curious about that. Just noticing the kind of quality of that, the texture, the sensation, how you might describe it. Maybe it's like warm or relaxed, or find some word or some way of describing that okay sense in your body. Or just having a broader sense of maybe what feels okay just in your experience. This isn't just your body, but maybe something in your environment that you saw when you're looking around actually feels okay to connect with that. Or might be the contact with something you're holding. Sometimes it can be through an object that you're holding or seeing. So what feels most okay in your direct experience? What feels okay? Or so that might, yeah, like I say, it might come through something out there in your environment. So just spend a moment noticing and just playing with finding a description for that right now. How might you describe that quality? It doesn't have to feel wonderful or anything like that. Just what's most okay or least difficult. Or maybe it is wonderful. That's welcome, of course. So just take a minute. More, just to notice. And then when you're ready, bringing that to a close. And again, an invitation just to share. Maybe one or two people might share anything, something they noticed about that, even if they noticed it was hard or something. A struggle is fine, but also if there's a some kind of word that describes the quality they noticed, I'd be welcome to hear it. So yeah, how was that?
Yeah, I can say something about that.
Thanks.
So yeah, just as I was just settling there, I was really aware of my belly. I was aware of my dinner, but then a little bit below that, I was kind of aware of how I was breathing quite deeply into my belly, and I was really just kind of felt very satisfied, just felt really easy, really in my body, really enjoying that breath sensation down into my belly. And as I sort of stayed with it, I was getting kind of very sea-like imagery,
okay.
And not like necessarily a very sunny, happy sea, but just maybe like the North Sea or something, a bit cold and grey, but just the swell in the tide as I'm moving my body. But I was just feeling the breath like the sea in my belly.
Nice, okay.
So a really embodied sensation.
Yeah, thanks for sharing, yeah. And mixing in, and symbol comes with it, doesn't it?
So yeah, it's
symbol
yeah,
sensation. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, for me, what I noticed is that it's a lot easier to notice what's uncomfortable than what feels good. So it was really sort of keep noticing, oh, no, that's not a good thing. Okay, it was quite a long process of finding something. And it was almost like a lack of discomfort that, okay, that part actually feels there's nothing troubling there. That's calm, you know.
Right,
that's the good bit I found. I found some calm places that weren't complaining at all.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's right. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, exactly. A lack of something, a lack of trouble. Yeah, so it may not be feeling, I mean, it's, that's why the language is so, you have to be so sort of tentative with the language, but yeah, it may not, it may be something very simple. Yeah, like I was feeling quite a lot of tension, and but then I noticed some sense of stability. It's like, oh yeah, that's not so bad. Didn't feel amazing or something, but it was something simple. And so yeah, it can be something very simple, or a lack of, like I say, where it's most or least wobbly, you could say, least difficult.
For me, it was a pull towards the bed that didn't feel comfortable.
Yeah, that's right.
Somehow, yeah, it was overriding the parts that were fine, and, you know.
Yeah, that can happen, that's right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this points to something we'll be talking about a bit later. We don't, with any of this process, we're not wanting to override an experience. If there's something in us that calls, or some part of our experience that's going, I'm really not okay, in whatever way, then it's always good to say, okay, hi, yeah, I can really, really take time to notice it, be with it, and also notice what feels perhaps different from that too. So it's not pushing away, it's including. So that's another way of looking at all this. So it might, what we look at next might add to that too. Yeah, thank you. So this is, there's probably more to be said, but it's okay to move on. Just wanting to draw out a couple of points from this. I think we often, when we under attack of self-criticism, it's often something we experience. Well, we experience a collapse internally, and that's painful in the body. But often where it starts is more like a thoughts about something, or projecting those thoughts onto other people. They think this, or it's very much a sort of up here process, often not whole of it, but yeah, that's often a big part of it. So if we can find something that's not that, that's just a very direct experience, so this is important, to something that's directly in your experience and in your body that feels okay, then that can help sort of balance, adds ballast even to your experience. So it's not just, oh, this is terrible thoughts about myself and I'm collapsing. It's like, oh, and there's something else happening. And yeah, my feet feel okay. My feet don't feel criticized. They're kind of good, you know, they're on the ground. Or my breathing isn't shit. It's just breathing, you know. So it's making a space for something in your direct experience. Yeah. So present moment, direct experience, and but also not just body. So it could be body, but you might have noticed, I invited people, you might notice something in your environment or in your, even, and of course there's lots of, in many approaches, it's like you might imagine something using imagination symbol, you might imagine a safe place. We haven't explored that, but that's a sort of, it's not just what feels good in our direct experience, we can use other methods too. So that was all about this first, I guess, this first tool, let's say, of broadening out our awareness to feel something that's directly okay in our experience. But this next piece, which I want to explore with you, is I'm calling it making space for the bigger you. So this is about finding a direct sense or a direct contact with, I guess, the truth that the critic is not all of you, what we call the critic, this critical voice, this process we experience, it's not just a voice, isn't all of you. It is a part of you. I've already been alluding to that, but I want to spend more time with this. So say you have words that saying, oh, you're worthless or something. That is a part of you saying that. That is a part of you saying that. So what? And to make that step to recognizing it as that and sensing it as that is a whole thing in itself. But I want to explore that process of beginning to sense, let's just call it the critic, because for simplicity's sake, sense the critic as not all of you. Because that's one of the troubles we get into, is it sort of feels like us. And then we can't listen. Then it's harder to know what's really going on under the surface, because we're kind of caught in this self-attack. So some of you are familiar with this if you've done any focusing with me or many other teachers before. This is what's called facilitative language or presence language. This is using a shift in our language to help us make a step from feeling identified with something to feeling like we can be with it. So feeling like we're identified with, well, either something that's believing the critic or the critic itself, to something that's bigger than all of it. And it's just a very simple shift in language. So I'm just going to play with that a little bit now. Do a little experiment even, and then we'll see how that goes. Just check on the time. So this may or may not work. So let's do an experiment. So I'm inviting you to think of something, like pick a usual self-critical phrase that you might find yourself saying to yourself or thinking about yourself, but nothing too harsh. If you can find something that's kind of like, I don't know, like a, what's my example? I don't know, like I bet those people think I'm really boring, or you're never going to be good at this, and maybe they're really painful, but for you, but find something that's just a little like something that's a bit that you would find often say to yourself. You don't have to share it with anyone. But I also want to check, is that possible for people to sort of find a kind of usual phrase that isn't good that they would say about themselves? Can you think of something like that? Yeah. But don't get stuck there. I'm not going to let you stay there long. So hold that thought. Hold that thought there. And let's first reconnect with our body. See, immediately I notice my whole experience going up here when I'm thinking about something critical. Okay, take a breath and again, recontact a bigger sense of yourself. Whoever that is for you, maybe something that feels like a bit of space in your body or in your experience. And then saying this phrase that you might say to yourself in a different way than you normally say it. So say, something in me says, ... you're never going to be good at this. Something in me says, you're always so useless. Something in me says, or some part of me says, and just take a moment and let those words sink in. Something in me says, I'm noticing some part of me that says, and see what happens. or something in me is saying. Just see what happens when you say it like that. And just another half a minute. Maybe to sense a broader awareness of your body as you do this. I'd also just be curious what happens. It doesn't matter. There's no right or wrong thing to happen. Okay. So I'm curious if anyone noticed something that happened when you said it like that. Something in me, a part of me says, And it's fine if you didn't notice anything.
Can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
When I said that to myself, it made me think, oh, maybe that part is wrong.
Ah, right, yeah, okay.
Whereas before, I would believe it. But when I said some part of me is saying that she thinks I look weird, It provokes the thought that, that part might not be right, in fact.
Yeah, well, okay, thank you. Yeah.
Because who knows what she's thinking, actually.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly the same thing happened to me, actually. Exactly the same. Wow. I found it... just easier to take it on, I guess. It seemed like a lesser sort of, not enemy, but lesser kind of, just a less scary enemy, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Thank you for showing that. Yeah. I've never actually tried this particular slant on it with a critical sort of sentence like that, but it's really interesting to hear what happens. I mean, I have tried it in myself, but not as a group thing. I mean, So, yeah.
I noticed.
Karen.
Yeah, sorry.
That's right, Karen.
It's Soraya. I noticed that I just smiled as I said some part of me.
Yeah.
I just felt this kind of softening inside and more space. It was almost as though I'd made it small in some way.
Yeah, that's right.
But it didn't feel like I forced it. It felt like it just happened.
Yeah, thank you.
Slid to the corner.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's right. So it somehow got smaller into like more to the corner. Great.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, very similar thing happened that just the significance of it got really reduced, saying something in me saying this, as opposed to kind of beforehand I felt like all of me saying it, and that made a really big difference.
Thank you. Great. So this is I've got a little helper to demonstrate this. this is something I stole from my son. This is a critic today. You might see it. Where's the video camera? There we go. So this is a move from feeling like, it's all of us, just as big, like that we feel like, rah, something's shouting at us, or we're shouting at somebody else, to something in me. Something. So we can begin to sense it as not all of us. Something in me. And this is really, and a crucial step on the process of this part, let's say this journey of freeing oneself from this kind of... freeing oneself from the inner critic. Or really, what that really means is relating to it differently. Because it's not like these processes don't happen to me. I no longer believe it so readily, and I can turn to it and go, So hello, something in me. So then there it is. So this step of seeing, which uses language or even just a symbol I'm kind of evoking here through an object. You might even take an object and do it like that. You don't have to use the words, but finding some way of getting bigger than what's criticizing you, yeah, is a crucial step. Yeah, and then we can be curious, and then we can listen, and we can inquire more about. And this is where the transformation happens. This already is a big thing to not have it as all of us, like some people described. Oh, maybe it's not true. It brought that shift in them, and that's great. And I didn't really realize that would happen. That's wonderful. So we realize that maybe it's not true, but there's more there. There's more that we can do, or more that we can have, more that can happen. So I just want to say a little bit about that. Once we sense that we can be with this part of ourselves, we can then really sense what's underneath it, the harshness that it's using, perhaps. And what I do generally when this is going on is I turn to it and I say, oh, okay, might you be worried about something? Yeah. Maybe you're worried about something. So this is an important, let's call it a generalization, that all critics are worried. So these parts of you are always worried or scared. So they generally respond pretty well to turning to them and go, okay, yeah, might you be worried about something? Oh, yes, you know, that's at their heart, they're worried about something. And the great thing is they often tell us what they're worried about in the language they're using. You look stupid in that. Oh, okay, you're worried I'm looking stupid. Yeah, you look really ridiculous. Oh, yeah, you're really worried. So they're actually telling you what they're worried about in the language they're using. It doesn't always work like this, but that's sometimes that's a very easy, neat move we can make, because they're telling us what they're worried about by calling us the name, you know, like, you're worthless. Oh, you're worried I'm worthless. Yeah. And that process can go deeper. I guess what we're aiming to move towards eventually is really understanding what it's wanting for us. And there's a lot I could say about this. We could talk for another hour on this, but these parts of us, the critics, hold some kind of wanting for us. They want us to experience something. Yeah. They want us to experience something. They do it in the most terrible, useless way possible, but they're actually trying to get us to experience something good, or protect us from something bad. So this is steps towards that process. Yeah. I'll just pause there for questions. Someone, we lost someone, didn't we? Or they'll come back. Anyway, any questions about what I've just said? Is it making sense? And feel free to disagree. Well, like, I'm not sure.
So is that part of what you just said about, can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
What you just said about the inner critic wants something good for us.
Yeah.
Is that, well, now I'm telling myself that this is a stupid question.
Okay, right. So right now we have a live critic in our midst. That's great. Please.
is that part of point two? This is my stupid question.
That's right. So yeah, something in you saying this is a stupid question. That's great. So let's acknowledge that. That's right. We can get caught in it right in the moment. Yeah. So something's worried that this is a stupid question.
Yeah, well, I asked the stupid question, but now you're ignoring it.
Oh, no, please. Well, I didn't. So what would... So did I miss the question?
No. I've gone off the idea altogether now. Okay. The question is, that stupid?
Right, okay, right. But we can do that. We can acknowledge. Exactly. But if it comes back or you want to ask more, please do.
But I kind of find, like, I can see how it's important to stay with the critic, because in a way, the critic wants us to be happy.
Yeah.
Even if, you know, it doesn't come across like that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So.
Also, just something about that. Once you know what maybe this part of you worried about, it's easier to kind of feel compassion about it, you know, towards it, not to experience it as just an attacking presence, but actually kind of, yeah, feel like, okay, it's still in my team, you know, you want something good for me, it just worries about this, and I can understand that. It's easier to feel empathy, maybe, towards it.
Yeah, that's right. That's my experience. Thank you for adding that. That's right. Because once we get to really what it's really wanting for us, or not, or it could be not wanting. It might not want us to be hurt. That's why it's being harsh. It's more empathic. We can feel, oh, well, of course. No, well, yeah, we give it more empathy. That's right. It's just one of my insights as being a parent of a child is that how easy it is to express my concern, what I want for my son in ways that sound, I wouldn't say they sound critical, but they're certainly worried, you know, and it wouldn't be much of a step for that to sound critical. So I might say to my son, I wouldn't say you look stupid in that, but like, I'm worried you'll get cold or something, you know. It'd be just another step to say, oh, you know, don't wear that, it's ridiculous, or you look really stupid in that, or it's such a small step. But actually from inside, under there, I'm actually caring about something. But how it comes out, so this is, yeah, it comes out in a critical way. So this is one of the ways in which this process, I think, gets embedded in us, is through what's the way people around us have tried in their own way to protect or care for us, but using harsh means. So we kind of internalize that process. So I'm aware of time, and what should I do? I want to just share with you, actually, rather than my third tool, because that takes a bit of time, but I want to share with you just three different kinds of critic that I thought I found helpful to recognize. And it broadens out the idea of what a critic, I guess, could be. And there's at least three. Anyway, there's an infinite variety, but three broad categories. So one is this kind of harsh critic that says bad things about us, I guess, or worries that other people are saying that, or indeed we might be saying that about other people. Sometimes we take that mode with other people. But a kind of harsh, there's a harsh quality to it, which is the most common way of thinking about this. But the other kind of critic is what is you could call a catastrophizing critic. Now this comes from the work of Anne Weiser-Cornell and Barbara McGavin, their work on working with really deep tangled places in us. But they recognize this part of us that often doesn't really speak, but it often shows us images of bad things. So it shows us catastrophes. So maybe you don't get this much, but I get this pretty much every day or a few times a week. Some part of me that shows my son being falling off a wall and breaking his head open, or my wife dying in a car crash, or getting a phone rings and suddenly it's like something terrible has happened. And they can be quite painful, you know, we can experience them as quite a painful kind of process. They're intrusive, you know, they're unpleasant. But how I recognize them these days is this kind of process. Oh, something in me is worried. It's showing me just what it really doesn't want to happen. It's showing me it doesn't want my son to die by falling off a brick wall, you know. So, and it might be any whatever catastrophe your catastrophe is, it often shows us what it's worried about through images and through, you know, that aren't nice, if you like. They don't feel nice, but yeah, if we can recognize it as a part of us, oh, okay, then that really helps. So I'm calling that a catastrophizing critic. The third type is, which is interesting, it's not harsh, right? It's not harsh. And you could call it an enabling critic. This is a part of you that kind of tells you what to do, but in a very one-sided way. You need to get out more, you know. You should do this. oh, what you need to do is this kind of thing, you know. And recognize the words here. So anything that's saying should, or anything that's insisting on something that you should do or need to do, is probably a critic. So by this, we're broadening the definition of critic to really something that's trying to manage or control your experience. So it doesn't have to be harsh. It could be a part of you that's trying to sort of manage your experience, trying to control it, but it's still doing it in a very partial way. By that, I mean it's still a part of us that's has a kind of like a narrow agenda, you know, and it, like you need to exercise more, and if you don't exercise more, you're a terrible person. That's kind of what it's saying in the background somehow, but it comes out, and yeah, it's not necessarily harsh, but it's also not compassionate in a way. So it's sort of being helpful, but in you know, it's a bit like some friends who might have to give us unwanted advice, you know. It's like, that's not really what's needed, but, you know, it happens. So we've got a kind of harsh critic, a catastrophizing critic, or let's call it an enabling. It's trying to enable you to do something. But all of those aren't all of us, yeah? It's a part of us. So, yeah, each of those we can turn towards for the same kind of process. Something in me is saying, oh, yeah, you need to get out more. Or you should do some exercise. Or you need to read more books. And it doesn't mean those words aren't something to be listened to, but again, we do this process. Okay, what might it be wanting for me? What might it be wanting for me? So find another, a deeper way of listening and relating to it, rather than getting caught up in the words. So this is a big part of what we're saying here. We often get caught up in the words of what these parts of us are saying. Oh yeah, I really should. And oh God, it's terrible that I'm not reading enough. Or, okay, can we sense underneath? What does it want? What does it want for me? And, you know, that's a whole process we could explore more. But I'll just pause there for questions, and then we'll come to a close. But so we've got a couple of minutes of questions. So critics come in many forms.
Is it possible to not have an inner critic?
Interesting. For good, I don't know. I mean, for long, for certainly for big periods of time, I suppose. I mean, like when I'm in really good form, you know, several days might go by without being really severely attacked by one of these kind of processes. Well, it might always, but it's more like I might notice it and it just bounces off, you know, in such a good place. but that's not quite the same as what you're asking, but that's sharing my experience of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I have a sense that it's more like that, really. I think that freedom increases, or that way of empathically relating to different these parts of you becomes more available. But yeah, I don't know what lies ahead. But yeah, but I think we wouldn't even call them critics. Then it's just like we just notice it as part. Oh, a part of me is thinking that. Yeah, yeah. Carry on, Twitter. Sounds like there's more there.
Well, so how do you make those parts more available, you know?
Yeah.
So you don't take so much notice of your inner critic.
Well, it's more about finding, like taking steps to in the way I've been describing, over time. So this is like really over time, finding a way of relating to these processes in a different way. So that's through, I guess, noticing what feels okay or good in our experience, and also turning towards the parts of us that are being critical with compassion and empathy, and not seeing it as all of us. Now, that's something you do over and over and over and over again. You know, it happens. And gradually, over time, that capacity to be with it without recognizing it as us increases, and therefore the freedom increases with it. If that makes sense. Rob?
I just wanted to add to what you're saying, Manju, that yeah. Something about building a relationship up with these parts over time, because critics can be a bit tyrannical, but once you start listening to them, and once you're in a better relationship with them, they don't have to shout so loud.
Yeah.
It's something about just becoming friends with them as the relationship establishes. that they're never going to go away, because they have all of those really valuable messages that we can find out what they are if we turn to them. There's a lot of good coming out of it, so we wouldn't perhaps ever want them to not be there, because there's so much that they're doing for us all the time. So building up a friendship in our critical parts.
That's right. We get to know them. And they become like old friends. Oh, hello, you know, it's you again. Come on.
I was just wondering, related to that, whether it's possible that over time these parts would just simply express what they worried about instead of doing their usual critical bit.
Yeah,
whether that's a possibility.
Definitely. No,
that they learn somehow that you can hear just the worry, you know, a useful bit.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? That's right. To cut straight to the worry. No, I think that happens. That's right. That it becomes more like that. We recognize it more quickly for what it is, or maybe it speaks more directly in that way.
Hmm.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so that's the end of our time. I just want to say just a couple of things about what next. So yeah, I've got another seminar coming up next month. It is on Wednesday, the 8th of March, and that's about facing uncertainty. So that's a kind of another aspect of this, I guess, what focusing has brought me, the capacity to stay with that experience more readily. The recording of this will be available, so please feel free to share it or give it out to people. So that'll be on my website, and I'll put it on Facebook. And yeah, if you've turned up for this call and if you're interested, I am offering this course in April, towards the end of April. This is an online course, probably put 5 or 6 people learning focusing or having a refresher to focusing, called Navigating a Life. So that's kind of a take on just an introductory focusing course, but it's about how to, using the normal skills of focusing, but to navigate our way through life in all its different territories. And that's the theme of the last seminar, of course, as well. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
And maybe see you again next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye for now.
Thank you, Manju. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.